Hello, everyone. Welcome to CoreCast. I am your host, Tim.
This is Sahil. Welcome, everybody, to a brand new, exciting episode of CoreCast. If you haven't already, do join our Discord channel. And if you're watching on YouTube, where we do this every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, do ask us questions during the episode, and we'll get to it. So without further ado, Tim, let's get to it. So, Tim, I'm wondering, what is the big deal about cemeteries? We talked about cemeteries in previous episodes, and they seem like a nice artifact of particles have these symmetries and this stuff and that stuff. But it seems like we already have equations to describe everything. So, what gives? Why bother studying symmetries?
Yeah, that's a great question. And particularly for those who are learning physics or who learned physics in high school and college, or even just watching movies, you always see physicists is always about scribbling equations on a blackboard, solving these really complicated, equations and computers, simulations. So why bother with these concepts called symmetries, right? I mean, of course, you can always just deal with equations. But the problem is equations don't capture the essence of the physics. And I think physicists, what we care about actually is understanding. So equations, of course, are a tool to understand natural phenomena. But it turns out symmetries are actually more powerful and sometimes are able to capture more of the interesting stuff with less fluff. So in essence, that's why symmetries are preferable a lot of times and more powerful.
Could you give an example, maybe from a high school physics type of example where this would be more apparent?
For example, in high school, we study a lot about different motions of objects. I think one of the first thing you learn is projectile motion. You drop a ball from really high up, it falls. And there are equations that describe, how the ball falls. And of course, there are many, many equations. You can have equations describing how cars move, how air molecules move, or even how planets circle around the sun, right? These, arguably, they are all different equations. And of course, the equations do reasonably well. And it turns out that they are more powerful concepts. Sometimes you can use that kind of just skip over the equations. That gives you an essence on what those systems behave like. And that concept, for example, is energy. You drop a ball and it goes down and bounds, or a planet circling around a sun. One thing they have in common is that the energy kind of gives you a rough description on how things are behaving. And as a concept, energy kind of tells you a little bit more about the system, and it uses less, right? So you can think of energy as a result of a system having symmetries, although that's not obvious, but it turns out to be true. So that just is one instance.
I think one thing that's a source of confusion for me on this matter is that symmetries describe what, at least from my understanding, is what operations or transformations you can do to a system and then leave the system unchanged. For instance, if you have a sphere and you rotate it any which way, it still remains a sphere and it looks basically identical. But if I wanted to figure out how things move, for instance, or how things behave, I don't feel I can purely rely on symmetries to be able to ascertain that. I mean, how does symmetry explain if I drop a ball and it falls to the ground? Yeah, that would be my question. It seems that I want to question you putting symmetries on a pedestal. Is that warranted, or is it actually warranted?
And certainly that's a good question. I think the issue is, in physics, there are two pieces in a physical system. The one piece is the particular way a system behaves. And we know that different systems behave differently. Right, you drop a ball and the ball will behave differently depending on which ball you choose, right? So that's one aspect of physics. Another aspect of physics has to do with how all systems behave, roughly. And a good analogy that we can consider is look at certain geometric objects, right? For example, if you look at, let's take a cube. If you take a cube, you look at the shadow of a cube, right? Mm-hmm. And depending on how you rotate the cube, the shadow will look different. Yeah, but the shape of the shadow might be very complex. But however, there is an aspect of the cube that is essential, right? A cube has six sides. It's got all the corners are the same. So that is the essence of cube. So while it is true that symmetry doesn't describe, it doesn't allow you to describe details of a system, like it doesn't exactly tell me why a ball will fall down, it doesn't tell me how exactly a planet will move around the sun, but it actually straight closer to the essence of all systems. So it depends on what you care about. If you're an engineer, let's say you care about particular way engines work, symmetries may not help you that much. But if your goal is to understand the commonalities of all systems of nature, then you actually really want to dig at the symmetry. So you want to know the essence of nature, if that makes sense.
I see. So are you saying, like, if I wanted to look at a particular system and understand how it behaves, then using equations would be probably more useful than symmetries? But if I take like a collection of different systems, say like planets orbiting around the sun, top spinning about, spinning about itself, then like understanding certain symmetries can help me understand the commonality that these different systems share. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And in some sense, this is kind of roughly, you can break down fundamental science, right? Like certain facts about the world, it just happens to be, right? Like you can study how far the Earth is from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
There is a number there. Symmetry is not going to tell you how far away that is.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, that's just a brute fact. The Earth just happens to be, I don't know how many million miles from the sun. That just is a brute fact. Underlying those brute facts are facts about nature. For example, Einstein's theory of gravity tells you how gravity really works. If you care about those aspects, the particularities, like how far away is the Earth from the sun, doesn't really matter very much.
Okay. So you're saying, like, in the grand scheme of things, the finer, like, I guess for lack of a better word, finer details don't matter as much. It's just like the broad contours of the system matter most so in order to understand the essence of it, of what you've been saying.
Yeah. Because in physics, we care more about not just how far away our planet is from the sun, but what about all planets? Maybe even go beyond all galaxies. Mm-hmm. So in fact, anything that has gravity, how they behave, those are more important. And it's much easier to go to concepts that are more generalizable. And it turns out symmetry is one of those concepts as opposed to equations by themselves.
I see. Okay, so we've been talking about like equations to describe the particulars of a system, and then we're talking about symmetries to explain kind of the essence of these systems and what they share in common. Is there any deep relationship between symmetries and the equations of physics that people use?
Yeah, indeed there is. And you can think of symmetry as a way, almost as like a generator of equations. For instance, imagine if I were to push a block. Let's say I push it to the front. And there's some equation describing how that block will move if I push it forward. Yeah. Physics would be very complicated if, let's say, pushing it forward is different from pushing it leftward or rightward or up and down, front and back, right? There's no reason why there couldn't be an equation for every occasion. You push a block, I push a block, someone else pushes a block. How do we know that it's not a different equation, right? But because of symmetry, we know that, hey, look, up, down, front, back, left, right should be the same. And we know that pushing, yesterday and tomorrow should be the same. So it tells us that, hey, the equation must satisfy those constraints. Pushing in all directions should be the same results. And it turns out that if you do that, the number of equations you can write down is very limited. You pretty much end up with the only equation that's possible. And you arrive at, let's say, Newton's law. So this way of thinking about equations is much more helpful than just thinking of them as mathematical entities that you plug in numbers and you get numbers out of them.
Are you saying that equations are constrained by symmetries of the system that you observe? Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And exactly. And it goes actually a lot deeper in particle physics. It turns out that in particle physics, even though people think that, oh, the equation looks very complicated, it turns out that if you study fundamental laws of physics, there are more and more symmetries, and we'll explain why there seem to be more symmetries when you zoom in. There are more and more symmetries, and it turns out that if you enforce that your equations have a set of symmetries, pretty much you can just write down all the possible combinations, and nature just takes advantage of that. All the possible combinations that also fits in those symmetries, they appear. So that's pretty much like equations are just kind of like a brute force outcome of the symmetries that you demand.
I see. Before we get into what you mentioned about zooming in, we'll ask kind of the converse question. Do equations restrict the types of symmetries that you can have, or is it only the other way, one way?
I mean, certainly that could happen. I think historically what happens is, like, the way people study physics is maybe first, let's say back in the days, I think this is a very good example. Imagine, I think Maxwell, a very well-known physicist, back in the days they were studying electromagnetism, right? And then they cook up this equation that describe a way for electromagnetic field to propagate. Yep. So they describe this equation called Maxwell's equation, and that equation is pretty much like experimental fact, right? You can test it out, it works. And it turns out that if you look a little deeper, that equation actually has an extra symmetry that you didn't initially proposed. And it turns out that Einstein was able to use that equation to deduce that, hey, look, in Maxwell's equation, space and time are treated in a symmetrical way. So historically, a lot of times through experiment, you propose equations. And when you look at these equations, you say, aha, guess what? These equations have an extra layer of symmetry. Then you propose that, hey, maybe these symmetries are more important. And then you generalize those equations, basically.
Oh, that is interesting. I'm assuming for the aficionados out there, you're referring to Lorentz symmetry, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. That is really interesting, where that actually makes a lot of sense, where you came up with these equations, they had this hidden symmetry in them, and then that actually was a more like, I guess, a more generalizable symmetry in some sense.
Yeah, and this is true again and again in physics, repeatedly, right? Like Einstein initially wrote down the equations on how space-time curve, and those equations used to be very complicated, right? It's lying pages and pages of equations. It turns out that if you organize those equations in some ways, there's a beautiful pattern around them. Like certain terms cancel out, and you can group them together in a very nice way. And lo and behold, if you and pe people invent discover those mathematical objects using language of differential geometry, they are able to like simplify the equation a great deal. And nowadays, even in particle physics, we don't even think of Einstein's equation as much of a big deal anymore, because once you impose the symmetry of the geometry of Einstein's equation, it's an inevitability. Einstein's equation is just a brute fact of the symmetries of the geometry of space-time.
That is very interesting, where you specify all the symmetries and then you can get the equation from it. Coming back to what you said earlier about zooming in and finding more symmetries, can you break down what you mean by zooming in and what more symmetries mean? How does that even arise? What does that even mean?
Yeah, and this is kind of a very subtle point that people don't quite understand when we first study symmetry, because like I told you, in physics, one of the symmetry is that front, back, left, right, up, down, they're all the same, right? And it doesn't matter which direction you point, physics to be the same. But of course, we can easily find counterexamples, right? Because like, look, in front of me, there's the computer, and behind me is the chair. They clearly are not the same. So how come, like, am I telling you a lie here? Like, what's going on, right? So it turns out that there are different ways symmetry manifest, and one of the most common ways symmetry manifests are actually broken symmetries. It means that nature inherently has that symmetry, but it has to make a choice. It means that the particularities of our universe doesn't obey that symmetry, but the equation has those symmetry. So in a sense, those symmetries are a little bit hidden. Loosely, that's what I mean. A lot of symmetries might not be apparent. And when you zoom in to a system, you zoom in smaller and smaller and smaller, the particularities of our universe becomes less and less important, and you're able to uncover almost those hidden broken symmetries.
Mm. Let me try to see if I can understand this like via example. Say you were to take like a gas of some particles, and they're just bouncing up, down, left, right, sideways, all over the place. So there's this kind of symmetry in some sense that doesn't matter what direction you're going. But then you cool down this gas and it forms a solid that is a very kind of like oddly shaped structure that definitively doesn't have like the same symmetry as the gas, for instance. And so in some sense, like, you've broken the symmetry because nature has to settle in some state. Any one of those possible states that it could settle in, or configurations of like how the solid could have formed, maybe are equally likely, for example, and nature just chose one because it just happened to be the configuration of that state at that particular point in time. And then, but if you zoom in enough, like small enough, you'll notice that each individual, like, I don't know, molecule, atom, I don't say molecule because like molecules may have orientations, but like each individual like particle that makes up the molecule still has that symmetry of like, it doesn't matter whatever direction it's going or whichever direction it's pointing. Am I just saying that? Is that a valid analogy or?
Yeah, that's fair. But probably the analogy can be simpler, right? Like the way I like to think about it is that nature is kind of like it's like going to Las Vegas. You're playing Monte Carlo game, right? Like, imagine you're playing poker or blackjack, whatever your favorite game is. You were dealt some cards. Let's say you got, the Queen of Hearts.
Yeah.
You might wonder, like, well, what the heck? I got this card. I don't know if it's a good card or not. Yeah. Basically, nature has to be dealt some card. Maybe the Ace of Spades would have been preferable than, the Three of Diamonds. Yeah. But there's actually a symmetry relating all those cards. All those cards were equally likely. Of course, unless if the casino's rigged. But nature is like this, it's like this. We believe nature is not a rigged casino. And our universe were dealt one of those cards. And of course, there are particularities of the card. Oh, it could be a jack, it could be a 10, it could be a 5. The suit could be different. It could be a diamond, it could be club, who knows? But we know that if we sum up all the possibilities, the symmetry will be evident if you look at all the possible cards, but we will only doubt one. We only have one universe to examine. And so that's where we at, right? Like, the Earth is here. We just doubt this card. The sun is here. And in the same way, like, we have different particles, protons, neutrons, electrons, and, quarks and gluons. Those are kind of like the cards that we were dealt. That's the way physicists think about it.
I see. That is actually a similar analogy. Okay, so you're basically like dealt cards. Any one of these cards can be equally likely, but you're dealt a card. So it's like nature has to choose what something to happen. So can we come back to how does this broken symmetry relate to like a chair behind you, a computer in front of you? Is it just that like any one of these, it could have been the other way around where the chair could have been like in front of you, computer in the back? I mean, this analogy is a little bit silly because, it can be broader than that, but like you can imagine you're facing the other way actually. And so what you called back is front and what you called front is now back.
Yeah, pretty much. And if you looked at the history of cosmology, these accidents or particularities of our universe was amplified each step of the way when the universe was created. So the universe started out with a lot of symmetries, but at some point, you have a plasma, the universe is expanding. At some point, certain spots got to be hotter, certain spots got to be cooler, just because it has to choose. There's some fluctuation. Then the hot spot turns to the galaxy, and again, the cold spot becomes void. And then these hot spots eventually turn into planets and Earth and all that. And then humans come to existence. So you can see, like, it could have been any other way, really. Like, no one would have had such a throw a fit about the particularities. But yeah, the at each step of our universe, more particularities were created, and kind of in some sense, more symmetries were broken, and then these symmetries kind of become hidden, right? And then sometimes it becomes a surprise when we discover them, and that's kind of the interesting aspect of these ideas behind symmetries.
Fascinating. So they're hidden symmetries, and then are all these symmetries actually like symmetries in terms of the way you're describing, like understanding the essence of the system, or can there be things where, like, you know, there's like a fake symmetry, like you think that there's symmetry but there actually isn't?
Yeah, that's a great question. So certainly there could be fake symmetries. So for example, there could be accidents, you know, things that kind of look the same, but really there was no reason for them to be the same. And then there are situations where things don't look the same, but they really are the same inherently. And it's actually not so easy to tease those out.
Could you give a visual example of like something that appears like a symmetry, but really is not the symmetry if you like zoom in, or, you know, you get to the essence of it?
Yeah, yeah. And the examples are plenty. And usually these are in emergent systems. And what I mean by that is just systems with a lot of moving parts. So one good example is if you look at, you know, good old water, right? You look at water or alcohol or any liquid for that matter, and you know that a lot of liquids, gas or solids, they a lot of materials, really, they kind of have a similar phase, right? They have liquid, solid, and gas, right? So if you take, let's say you get alcohol and water, and you grab a bowl of water and you grab a bowl of alcohol, you can boil them, you can freeze them, you can stir them around. You might think that, hey, look, they look so similar, right? Shouldn't there be a symmetry relating water to alcohol, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you'll be mistaken if you think that's true. I mean, they couldn't be different substance, right? You know, water is H2O and alcohol is, I don't know, ethanol, right?
Yeah.
And it turns out that the apparent similarities between them, it just has to do with the way large systems behave. It turns out that, you know, you just take materials generically, they just happen to, they'll kind of converge to a common behavior. And these are called universality classes. In complex system, chaotic system, there are these almost like focal point of behaviors that system tend to settle down into. And then these become like almost accidental symmetries or emergent symmetry, if you like. And that's what we see sometimes.
Okay, so I'm not sure if I'm seeing a symmetry in like these three cases, because like a symmetry to me means you could like make a transformation of the system and it leaves it unchanged in some sense. So I'm trying to understand, like, from the analogy of like different phase transitions from like solid to liquid to gas, how does it involve a symmetry? I understand that they share this like common property, but like, I mean, for example, like you could have like two tops that are spinning and that are like cylindrically symmetrical, but you know, by looking at them, they're clearly not like the same thing. You know, you have to spin one differently versus the other.
I mean, yeah, in this case, symmetry will be like related, changing the particle type, right? Like you can change water to alcohol and it will be able to perform very similar function, right? Like you can use you can use water as a coolant. Well, you can use alcohol kind of as a coolant too. Maybe a better example could be like a hunk of metal, for example. So a hunk of metal generally have what we call a lattice structure, meaning that the atoms in the metal are structured in a uniform way, right? And you look at different types of metal, like aluminum, gold, titanium, whatever, they all have slightly different crystal structure, right? But if you zoom out, you kind of don't see that crystal structure anymore. And if someone presents to you a hunk of iron, you really wouldn't know which way, you know, which orientation the lattice structure is facing. So the material almost gained what we call an emergent rotational symmetry. you know, when you zoom out, it looks the same in all directions, despite the fact that, you know, it has a some preferred direction in the crystal structure. So that's a better example, right? Like in everyday lives, you don't, you really don't care if a hunk of metal is facing slightly to the left, turns slightly to the right. It doesn't really change its material properties, right? So that mm-hmm. that's a, probably a better example of these emergent symmetries.
Yeah, that does make sense. So if I were to visualize like this spherical hunk of iron or metal that, like, if I zoom in at a certain distance scale, the atoms would be arranged like, you know, this may not be correct, but just for the sake of example, like a cubic lattice, like imagine points, you know, spaced out square-like grid, except in three dimensions, and that has a particular orientation. It's not spherically symmetric. If I rotate it a certain way, I'd be able to tell the difference of like what I rotated it versus when it was back to the original orientation.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've explained there being the notion of like fake symmetries. Given the example of it, how does this arise in particle physics? Like, I guess, yeah, just like all the symmetries that, you know, we've talked about that you've described, like, I guess what would be examples of fake symmetries, or how do people tease apart like fake symmetries that they see?
Yeah, and that's very challenging. Like for example, if you look at particle physics, a lot of times symmetries in particle physics are just relationship between particles, right? For instance, we have, let's say, we have electrons, which is you know, what orbits atoms, and quarks, which is what made up of protons and neutrons. You might think that, hey, you know, should they be related? Maybe they should be related, right? And if you try to relate them, you will have to demand a certain type of symmetry, right? That there's a way to kind of convert a quark into an electron. And if you do that, this is one of the theoretical modern particle physics, you will be prescribing what we call unification. You basically have to, because quark have color forces, which is different than electromagnetic forces, and electrons have only electromagnetic forces. So you kind of have to be able to, if you were to convert a quark to an electron, you have to convert the color force into electromagnetic force. So if you were to do that, you know, there has to be a new symmetry. But at the same time, it could, you know, maybe there is no relationship between them. Maybe it's just an accident that, I don't know, that we have these two types of particles here. So it is not easy to tease them out. But if there was a symmetry, then there must be some non-obvious relationship between these two particles. And sometimes it could be very not obvious.
Mm.
Sure, these two particles are different, but that difference could may be explainable by, you know, like we were just dealt some cards in the universe. It just happened to be, but these are not truly, they're not real differences. They're just, you know, whatever happens to be. So, yeah, so it's not easy. There's no right and wrong formula to tease those out, but these are just the way the physics works. We have to propose hypotheses and test them.
I don't know if you know the history of this very well, but your example reminds me of way back before quarks were even discovered. I think people thought the neutron and the proton were like, had a symmetry where you could like exchange them or something like that. Like they were almost basically identical to each other, except for charge.
Yeah. So the neutron and proton has very similar mass. The neutron is slightly heavier, but the neutron doesn't have charge and the proton has a charge. And what you described actually turned out to be true. Actually, it's not a fake symmetry. And there is what we call, they're related by the weak forces. And in order for the weak force to operate, there has to be a symmetry that the weak force operates on.
I see.
And usually when there's a force, there's a symmetry linked to them. So yeah, there is a symmetry linking protons and neutrons. And we can explain why they are so similar to that. And it turned out to be true.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah, so we're almost at time. So I wanted to give you a chance to leave the audience with any, like, I guess, overall kind of like big picture of like usefulness of symmetries, how that relates to equations, and kind of like summing up what we talked about.
Yeah, I think I just want to emphasize one point that, in physics, the way movie depicts it, it's always about, oh, complicated math, complicated equations, complicated computer simulations and all that. But I think really research level physics, a lot of times it's we just think of those equations as tools or those very complicated, programs we use or calculational tools. Those are just tools to uncover something deeper. And that deeper thing is a lot of times they are symmetries. Symmetries and often can often be summarized just by describing them, what they are, and they don't really come with equations. I can describe the model of particle physics as just a set of symmetries, and then nature fully utilized those symmetries. And this kind of is one of the beauties of physics. We're not really just calculators calculating things, right? Those are mostly engineering, I would say. Physics is about uncovering beautiful patterns. And there's a little bit of a detective story there too, right? Like you have to tease out, hey, which one is real? Which one's fake? What's worthwhile direction to pursue? How to relate one thing to another. So that's really what fundamental particle physics is about. And we've uncovered some fantastic symmetries, and there are have been proposed some, brilliant, really imaginative symmetries that are yet to be tested. And maybe we'll cover those in later episodes.
That makes sense. I guess one quick thing that we can maybe give a very like a super high level overview of this, but like each from my memory of particle physics, I remember that each symmetry corresponds to a conservation law. So essentially, like I give you a set of conservation laws, and then that can also constrains a set of equations or possible combinations that can form. Is that understanding correct as well?
Yeah, I would say these, what you mentioned, this is just a mathematical fact. I mean, yeah, symmetries help us describe systems, and it also lead to what you call conservation law. And that just happens to be a fact. When you combine multiple symmetries together, you can deduce that mathematically. But I would emphasize more on the symmetry aspect. And there has been recent advances that shows that, hey, not all symmetries come with the way the conservation laws in the conventional sense. I mean, there's been new research in that front. So it's just that we emphasize it's important to think of symmetries in this, I guess maybe, for lack of a better word, it makes sense to put symmetries on a pedestal because it is the number one guiding principles that, physics has. And that's how we describe nature, really, not through equations, but through symmetries that we have uncovered.
And then last point I want to touch upon is that like this is something you and I were discussing and want to just ask you about this for the sake of the audience is can we imagine the current so imagine you had that cube example and you have basically the shadow of the cube, you rotate the cube in a particular orientation, there's a particular kind of shadow that doesn't look very like cube-like. It's only if you go to like the third dimension do you actually see the cube as is, but on two dimensions it's hard to ascertain like what shape it actually is. So can we think of the set of equations that we have describing particle physics as like that projection, that shadow of that cube onto the surface, and that like the essence of what we're looking for is the actual cube itself?
Yeah, exactly. I think that is exactly the point. And that's, yeah, and indeed, when an undergraduate, let's say, go through all the physics courses, you learn all these equations, and then but once you go to a higher level into a graduate course, you realize that, yeah, those equations are kind of like projections, right? They're kind of like, if you look at a particular system in a particular angle, yeah, you get these sets of equations. But really, what matters more is the shape, that gives you those equations. And those often come from symmetries, they come from geometries, they're geometric objects that are kind of beyond equations, basically.
Yeah, I hope in a future episode we can like cover more of like the geometrical nature of like I guess just of our reality. But yeah, on that note, I want to thank everybody for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, thank you all for joining. Bye.